Everybody, I'm George from Ireland. Well, tonight marks the 100th anniversary of the invention of television, and it's transformed society possibly more than any other invention in the last century. I mean, even the internet, to some extent, is an outgrowth of that, like watching videos and so on. So it really is extraordinary. So John Logie Baird demonstrated it in Soho, London, a century ago tonight. So therefore, it's a British invention. So Mr. Logie Baird was a Britisher, more precisely, a Scotsman. And there's a blue plaque on the house where he demonstrated it. So it's obviously its etymology is far away, and then obviously you know what a vision is. So from ancient Greek. So, wow, because they'd had daguerreotypes from the 1840s. Those French brothers invented them. We now call them photographs. People experimented with moving images by putting enough photos together fast enough so that it seemed to be one fluid image. That's how the mind perceived it. And they could show those in cinemas. But could you actually broadcast, have the camera one place and people watching it somewhere else a significant distance ago? And so that then he experimented with that and actually was able to go into color straight away. It's not till the late 60s that, I mean, public television was in color. So although he achieved this extraordinary breakthrough and founded his company, although he was in some ways a technical genius, he did not die a particularly wealthy man. So that is John Logie Baird from Helensburgh, which is just outside Glasgow, who grew up in a middle-class family. His father was a Church of Scotland minister, so very highly regarded, although not that well off. His mother was from an affluent family of shipbuilders. So he went to school there in Glasgow, the University of Glasgow. And by the way, the Scots universities were definitely the equal of their English counterparts at that time. So although he was brought up in a fervently Christian family, he was not sure whether religion was true at all. He had left-wing leanings and so on. So he wanted to fight in the British Army, the First World War, but he was rather infirm. So they gave him a job with an electrical power company. Remember, we'd only really had an industrial use for electrical power for like 40-odd years before this, you know, when Thomas Edison invented the light bulbs and factories started using electricity. So very few houses were connected to electricity back then. So he was obviously a highly intelligent man studying engineering and so on. So he was dogged by ill health all his life, which is why he died a relatively young man. Well, I mean, not an old man by those standards. Anyway, and he moved to South Britain in the 1920s. And that's when he began experimenting on televisions. And it might seem all very obvious what the technology was, but no one had done it before using really primitive components like needles and things like that. So how could you have an image travel through the waves we picked up somewhere else by an analog system and so on? So it seemed quite hair-raising, even dangerous, some of the things that he was doing. All right. So that's why he realized he had to use thallium sulfide and things like that. So the first very wavy image that he projected was sort of a man's face. And he called his invention the televisor rather than the television initially. And he showed his friend Oliver Hutchinson, who was also a business partner. So he'd been demonstrating silhouettes the year before in Selfridges, a big department store in Oxford Street, London, founded by an American retail entrepreneur. But that's another story. But then he did a public demonstration at the Royal Institution, which is a scientific body. And journalists in the Times covered it. Obviously, it only went for 12 and a half seconds, the very first one. And so people were only seeing it just a few meters away from where it was broadcast. But obviously, the range got longer and longer. And only a year later, he was able to send the signal 438 miles, or so over 700 kilometers. So the rate of advance in the early years was really just extraordinary. So some people say that this thing would never catch on. People want to go to the cinema or whatever. But the British Broadcasting Corporation, only founded in 1922, they almost immediately recognized the significance of this breakthrough. And they began making programs at Broadcasting House and at 16 Portland Place, which was not too far away. And BBC Public Television began broadcasting in 1936 from Alexandra Palace, a building which still exists. So that's on an eminence in North London. You're going to get the signal in London. And obviously, like any new technology, The cost of a television set was ruinously expensive. And that was only black and white. You could only receive the signal in London. And obviously, after the Second World War, expanded. The United States caught on to this. And obviously, the United States, from after the Second World War, really took over. And they made the huge breakthroughs. And that's it. I can't remember who said it in the late 60s. Something didn't happen on television. It didn't happen at all. I was someone who grew up in the television age. It's hard for me to imagine life without television. But get rid of your telly. You have so much more free time. I remember the poet T.S. Eliot says he's very worried about the effect of television on little children. We've got couch potatoes. It's so mesmerizing. You switch it on, you zone out. It's kind of a passive entertainment format. Doesn't even require you to get up and go somewhere, going to the cinema or the theater. It's not participatory in the same way. I was taking over everything. But it can be informative. It can be entertaining. It can be pernicious as well. Wow. And so the television screen's almost everywhere. And George Orwell, in 1948, when he was writing 1984, he takes this and calls it telescreen. So there'll be everyone. They'll also be spying on us. And actually, that's happened, because your laptops and phones can be used to spy on you, to watch you as well, to record you without your knowledge, and doing so to the unconsenting. So that's John Logie Baird. I'm not sure that he ever contemplated the socioeconomic effects of what he'd invented. And he was also involved in infrared night viewing, in radar, which is radio distance and ranging and things like that. He had his own company. So yeah, he died in Bexhill on Sea on the south coast of the United Kingdom. He's laid to rest in Helensburgh, where he grew up. So he was an undemonstrative type, very perhaps desiccated, scientific. He was married, he had two children, and he would probably rather remember it as a scientist rather than someone who did something for the entertainment. He was involved in cable and wireless. He had his own company, John Logie Baird Limited, and so on. But he wasn't presumably too pecuniarily actuated, because you think of all the money made by television. Did he even patent it? I don't know. But that is John Logie Baird. We get our news, our culture, our music, sport. It's been transformative of how these things are done. And obviously, you don't have to go and watch the matches in person. You know, religion has been spread. Religion has been undermined by this, political messages and so on. What really made the difference in the United Kingdom in the 1950s was the coronation of Elizabeth II, 1953. And that motivated a lot of middle-class families to purchase a television when else is going to be broadcast on TV, which they usually couldn't afford. And obviously, by the 60s, working class could afford telly. 1970, colour television came to the United Kingdom. Republic of Ireland, we didn't have it till about 1962. And you could only one channel, RTE, Radio Television, or just choose on and off, or only broadcasting for a few hours, afternoon and evening. Right, thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, the new PayPal, georgecallan7@gmail.com. Goodbye.